helped you. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Hello. Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. We're excited to have a joint City Council Planning Commission meeting. The city clerk had just let us know earlier it's been since 2017, so we're happy to be here with the Planning Commission and the City Council, and our regular City Council meeting will immediately follow. So we will be doing some of the formalities then. This special meeting, we're going to go right into establishing a quorum, which we're all here except for Council Member Barton, and I expect her shortly. The way this is going to work today is we're going to do one public comment. This is an information session. There will be no decisions made today by Council or Planning Commission. We're going to give you an update on information for offshore wind, for the battery storage Vista project, and for the downtown design. Included in that, there will be a discussion on historical preservation, heights, and some of the other things. So we only have 2 hours. We're going to get started. And before we do, I actually have something that I want to share real quick, and then we're going to go to public comment. So on behalf of the City Council Commissioners, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude and recognition for your dedication and hard work serving our community. Your commitment to ensuring the responsibility and sustainable development to our city is truly commendable. Your role as Planning Commissioners is crucial in shaping the future of Morro Bay through your expertise, thoughtful analysis, and careful consideration of various proposals. You play a vital part in maintaining the unique character and charm of our beloved city. Your efforts contribute to the preservation of natural resources and foster a thriving and vibrant community. We understand the hours you devote to reviewing plans, attending meetings, and engaging with the public. Your willingness to listen to concerns and aspirations of our residents is a testament to your commitment to serve in the best interests of Morro Bay. Your dedication to transparency and inclusivity ensures that all voices are heard and considered in the decision-making process. The Morro Bay City Council recognizes the immense value you bring to our community. Your expertise, professionalism, and integrity have earned you both respect and trust, from the council and the residents. As we continue to navigate the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead, we are confident that with your guidance and expertise, Morro Bay will continue to flourish. Your commitment to upholding high standards of planning and development will undoubtedly shape a bright and sustainable future for our community. So again, we extend our appreciation to each and every one of you and your outstanding service to the Morro Bay Planning Commission. So thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I appreciate it. With that, we will open public comment. I have two speaker slips to start with. Rachel Wilson, followed by Betsy Gaudette Cross.
Good afternoon. I listened to a meeting that Vistra did at Moss Landing last Wednesday, and they talked about plume modeling. Next, please. This was the slide that they presented on plume modeling. And they said steady winds at 15.8 miles per hour, a weather condition occurring only, I love that word, that's a sales pitch word, 7% of the time. By the way, 7% of the year is 26 days. Next slide, please. Plume modeling just simply says where's the smoke going from a fire. They'll talk about C-rail, which is the safe exposure limit. And this is what Vistra said they found for Moss Landing in their plume, that hydrogen fluoride would exceed the safe limit if there was a fire. Next, please. They talked about steady winds at 15.8 miles per hour, 7% of the time. They said only 7%, but again, that's 26 days out of a year. Next, please. What does that mean? If there was an incident at Moss Landing that released airborne contaminants, on one of the 26 days, it would exceed the allowable limit for hydrogen fluoride gas. Next, please. Hydrogen fluoride gas is deadly, or it causes severe respiratory. Next, please. So how often does Morro Bay have winds that are 15.8 miles per hour or above? Today is one of those. If you see white caps, it's one of them. That's 2019 data. Next one, please. 2020 data. Next, please. 2021 data. Next, please. 2022. We're going to stop and look at this one. If you look at the bottom of the red line, that's at about 15.8%. If you look February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, most of our days are at 15.8%. Next slide, please. 2023 data showing the same thing. With global warming, they are expecting us to have more windy days. Next slide, please. So the question is, why would Vistra even consider a BESS plant for Morro Bay? This is what they said at their meeting. It is very rare that we will have any ground level impacts. They did not say we will not. If all our systems work as designed, we know that lithium battery plants have not worked as designed. And at Vistra, we say that we like to learn from all of our events. Morro Bay is a tourist town that cannot evacuate. We should not be a learning site. In the future, the number one thing REACH and any other organization should look at before recommending an industry is how safe it is. Thank you.
Betsy, 1 minute, please. I'm going to ask you all really very nicely. We only have 2 hours, and we want to share information with you. So I'm going to ask you, please, wave in your support. Thank you.
I am not a scientist, but when Rachel shared that with me yesterday, it was like, oh, my God. I was, like, totally freaked out. But as a teacher, okay, well, first of all, look at those two pictures. That actual picture on the left was from their video that Vistra put out. And, of course, the other one is one I took the other day. Next. I was watching that meeting, too, last Wednesday. And since then, I've had some residents who have reached out for me from Moss Landing. And what they have said is, do not let Vistra build in your town. They are not a good neighbor. They destroyed the roads, and then they refused to fix them, among other things. So anyway, the first meeting we had with Vistra was exactly a year ago in September. And since then, I have been studying and reading, watching videos, talking to people. I'm not a science person, so a lot of this just goes over my head. But what is sticking is scaring the life out of me. And I am so confused about what you guys are thinking. Next. So as a teacher, I know that knowledge needs, in order for it to be absorbed, it needs to be repeated. And so Rachel pointed out that scientists don't use the word only in her class. She said, don't ever say only. But salespeople use only all the time. And then she talked about the winds. And Vistra's PowerPoint was selling us that the idea that our plant and Moss Landing's plant could be safe, but they were always talking about all the things that could go wrong as well, which is, like, really scaring me. They purposely said 7% instead of 26 days. 7%, you think, oh, that's not bad at all. But 26 days out of the year, the winds are such that if there were a fire, it could be devastating. Vistra should have done a plume study first. Next. Again, here we are with the same graphs. And I'm putting them up here again so you guys can see how much the wind is above. Next, please. Next. Do we ever want a hydrogen fluoride gas released into our air? Do we even want to take that chance? Next. Why are we even talking about this? From what I understand, and granted, I don't know a lot, but aren't we supposed to be waiting until after the election? And we do need a town hall with our representatives like Moss Landing, but we want a true town hall where we can come up and ask a question. What they did is you submitted questions, and then they chose what questions. And to me, that's not a true town hall. Next. I'm always, because I'm out there on social media and kind of the face of this, you know, of the, kind of this movement, people from Los Osos and Cayucas are concerned. And I want to save Estero Bay. Thank you. And I know you do too.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Public comment is open.
Hi, my name is Karen Aguilar, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I have a really quick statement to make about Vistra. They remind me of the pharmaceutical companies and the ads that they have on television. You see people running through, you see people running through daisy fields, but they're on pharmaceutical meds. I don't know anybody who has to take farm meds that are going, man, I can't wait to get my next one, my next round. So that's my 2 cents.
Thank you for letting me speak. As last time, I won't say my name because some people have been threatened with lawsuits. I am a voter and resident here at Morro Bay. I noticed that there was a battery fire in San Diego in the last couple of weeks. Was it Valley Storage or something like that? They evacuated all the residents within a quarter mile by cell phone, I understand. I'm hoping if you put this here, we'll sound the nuclear alarms to make sure everybody knows there's a battery fire. And also, are we going to have standby evacuation buses at the high school, which is right next to this facility? We want to make sure the kids get out of here. You know, if there's a fire and they're going to breathe some of the toxic gases that have been mentioned here. You came here already intending to industrialize our beachfront. You knew that you would have to have a change in the code to make this happen, but you came anyway. I don't think that's fair. There's a controversy right now where a restaurateur said F the locals. I feel a little bit like that. I'm sorry if that offends you, but that's what it feels like. We completed the 10-year plan, and now you want to change it. Can you guarantee no fires? If you can guarantee it, then let's talk. If you can't guarantee it, you're just going to tell us how great the systems are to prevent the fires. Really, take it somewhere else. Put it somewhere where it's not next to a population center. By the way, I'm a former nuclear submarine officer. I know a lot about nuclear power. I'd rather live a mile from Diablo Canyon than a mile from what you're planning to do here. I would feel safer. And I have a lot of science in my background. So I'll finish just by saying, please don't put this here. It's okay if you just walk away. We're happy with that. There's a lot of people that don't want you. Thank you.
One of the big things here also is there's been multiple stay-in-place orders at Morro or at Moss Landing. You know, I'm from a place that had a home next to high density of chemicals. My home insurance went up from $200-something to thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. My home went down from, you know, about $6 million to about $1 million afterwards. I was personally devastated by projects that really harm my family. We would study water. My uncle, a water scientist, we moved here to escape that, and now we're dealing with it again. And it's just one of those things where if we did the math right, at that amount of it takes – I sold our car this week to a firefighter. He told me it's 20,000 gallons for a single Tesla fire, and that water becomes, like, beyond contaminated. That's the current way they do things. And it also gives the firefighters cancer, et cetera. If we just do the math and say, okay, we have 15,000 car batteries, how much water is that? It's between, what, 200,000 and 600,000 fire trucks worth. We don't have that. Are you going to buy that? How many sirens is too many? How many warning sirens have gone off? You guys have had multiple stay-in-place, stay-in-shelter orders. How many sirens have gone off there? How does that affect the value of our homes or the feel of our community? So these are just real questions that this is just the wrong place. I think we're going to submit a proposal to between Past Robles and Bakersfield for an alternate site very soon. We are just asking you guys to stop doing this to us. We've already lost one house being proximity to chemical densities. We're not really wanting to do it again. So we're documenting this. We're shedding light on this. We just want to preserve our community. Please help us.
Good afternoon. My name is Ron Bavasso. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. I was up in Moss Landing last week poking around. They have a population of 751 people.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Mayor, Council Members, Commissioners, and City staff. My name is Steve Ray, and I'll say it. Come and get me. Speaking of the 26 days, 7%, that doesn't sound like much of the year. Maybe we could just hold our breath for 26 days and won't have to worry about it. Maybe that'll work. I want to talk about the process. As someone who's been involved in the writing and promotion of and opposition to environmental impact reports for over 40 years, and having taken two to the Supreme Court and prevailed on two precedent-setting cases, I know just a little bit about environmental impact reports. The impact report for this project is going to be quite extensive, very detailed and technical, and the staff is allowing 45 days to review it. That is an absurdly short amount of time to review this EIR. The normal one for a project of this size is 90 days, double that amount. I recommend that the council direct staff to make it a 90-day public review period to be adequate. Second, I noticed in the list of items that were completed in the environmental impact report, among those completed, it said that the introduction is completed. As someone who has been involved in this, I find this totally astounding that the introduction has already been completed when the EIR hasn't been completed. What that says is that the conclusions have already been drawn, have already been decided on the project, and now you've got to write it to make it fit the conclusion. So it's highly improper. In any EIR I've been involved with, or members of my family who write them have been involved with, the introduction is the very last thing you write, because that's where you start to introduce exactly what the rest of it's going to say. And to have the introduction completed is just, I don't understand that at all. Second, there are two major things that are omitted from the staff report. One is that this project will wind up going to the Coastal Commission. Everybody knows that. Even if whatever the city decides is probably going to be appealed by other side to the Coastal Commission, and the fact that there's going to be an amendment to the coastal development plan required, the Coastal Commission is going to have to see this, and the fact that that wasn't included in the staff report is a very serious omission in talking about where this project is going. The other thing is that in November 2024, there's going to be an election. And that wasn't mentioned at all. That could have a serious impact on this at all. So I would, as you read the report, be very aware of what is there and what is not there as well. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Nicole Dorfman, 15-year resident of Morro Bay. Just to build on things that other people have said, somebody mentioned they feel that it's safer living close to Diablo Canyon than living close to this proposed battery storage plant. And one of the things that really stood out to me in reading some of the reports that was on the website is they talked about once this plant is fully operating, it will have 15 full-time jobs divided up into three shifts, so five people per shift. And I'm going, well, what about security? One of the things about Diablo Canyon is they have armed guards there 24/7, and I believe they shoot to kill. I mean, they're serious over there because it's a serious risk. What we're going to put on our waterfront here, this is a major risk, and it is a terrorist target. It is putting a target on our back. There is ample evidence that energy infrastructure is now a target for people meaning to harm us. So are we going to have barbed wire security guards? How are they going to deal with the tens of thousands of cars passing through there every single year, if not more? Another thing I was very concerned about was they said at the peak of construction, there would be 450 trucks per day. And I'm wondering, is that one way? They have to come out. So that's 900 trucks, many of which would be coming down Beach Street and then onto the Embarcadero. Is that safe? These trucks carrying potentially hazardous material down Beach Street to a stop sign where there may be a child running out or a dog or a ball, or it just seems like this is the wrong location. Wrong location, move it somewhere else. I mean, my goodness. Thank you very much.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to Council and Planning Commission. Is the Harbor Director, excuse me, oh, sorry, AG, I almost forgot, AGP.
thank you, Mayor Wixom. There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment. Thank you, Dana. Is our Harbor Director ready to roll? We will get into this.
He is on Zoom and ready to go. I will share his PowerPoint.
So the first item that we're going to bring forward is going to be information and timelines on offshore wind development. And please remember, the information we're sharing today is the information that we have received, whether we've gone to workshops, participated, and so the Harbor Director will give you that timeline from there to today. I will add, and I did send an email of significance today to the City Manager and Mr. Chaffon, that the San Luis Obispo County Government Center on November 1st will be hosting a forum for offshore wind at 4 p.m. It will be run by Congressman Carbajal's office, Senator Laird's office, and Assemblywoman Addis's office. So there will be more information posted. This is just a press release going out today, so you will have that date if you're interested in attending. And with that, I will turn it over to Ted.
Can you hear me, Mayor?
Yes, thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wixom, City Council members, City Manager Kimball, Planning Commission, residents, guests, and stakeholders. My presentation today is just one of many more to follow. It's intended as a basic introduction. It is not a technical presentation. I'm not going to be presenting any potential uses of the city or the harbor by offshore wind leaseholders. This presentation is meant to get us all on the same page to understand the terminology being used, who the leaseholders are, the offshore wind locations, recent activity, legislative actions that all of us should be following, and what we expect in the future. Dana, can you, there you go. Thank you, Dana. You can go to the next slide. There it is. So this slide that you're seeing right now shows the locations of activity occurring on the East Coast and the West Coast. The East Coast is several years in advance of the West Coast due to the relatively shallow waters of the eastern continental shelf. That allows for the wind turbines to be fixed to the ocean floor. On the West Coast, we have much deeper water requiring floating turbines. If you notice on the left of your screen there, about center left, you will see the Morro Bay call area. That is also known as a wind energy area. You'll be seeing the term WEA referring to wind energy areas. Next slide. So on December 7th, 2022, NOAA awarded three leases within the Morro Bay wind energy area. I'm going to identify who those leaseholders currently are. Next slide, please. And I want to make mention of another recent development in our local waters, and that is the proposed Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary. As you can see, this lines up just south of the Morro Bay wind energy area. You see down below a website, which is NOAA.gov. You still have the opportunity to comment on that proposed site. That has not been completely ratified at this point, so whether you want to comment for or against, please do so by October 25th. Next slide, please. So here are the provisional wind area leaseholders. I mean, you may want to ask, why are they called provisional leaseholders? And that is because there are many requirements they need to meet by specific dates in order to obtain a final lease. So Equinor is one of the leaseholders. They are headquartered in Norway. They've been operating in the U.S. and currently are developing offshore wind facilities on the East Coast. Invenergy, which is now called Energize Ventures, is a U.S.-based company in Chicago. They are also developing offshore wind facilities on the U.S. East Coast. And we were just notified that they are naming their wind energy area off our coast and calling it Eden Hill Wind. And then there is Golden State Wind, formerly Central California Offshore Wind. They are headquartered in Madrid. Partnership between Ocean Winds, who currently is developing offshore wind on the East Coast, and the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board. Next slide. So here are the agencies that are involved in offshore wind. Locally, we have REACH. They have no jurisdiction over offshore wind. They have basically pooled together local stakeholders so that we can have a larger voice in the development of offshore wind. Their main objective is Central Coast economic development. And then on the federal side, we have BOEM. That's the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. That is the lead agency. They issue the provisional lease, and they will issue the final lease once all the conditions have been met. Once the final lease is issued, that lease management gets turned over to BESI, the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. So BESI will be handling lease management for the following 30 years. And then on the state side, we have the California Energy Commission. They are involved in energy policy and planning. And then a whole bunch of other state agencies, Coastal Commission, Ocean Protection, State Lands, and the Public Utilities Commission. Next slide. So we've had substantial activity this year, and I'm going to just highlight a few. You certainly hopefully had a chance to look over some of this material. But I'll first mention the D.C. visit, which was a CMAQ conference in Washington, D.C. That was an opportunity for Mayor Wixom, Councilmember Landrum, and myself, as well as our Public Works Director, Qualick, to attend and lobby for the city's interest. We had the opportunity to meet several different agencies while we were there, some of them involved in offshore wind and some of them involved in other areas. But we were very successful this year, as you may have heard, regarding funding for dredging in the future at Morro Bay. Next slide, please. My next item I'd like to show to you is the Pacific Offshore Wind Conference. This was a conference in Sacramento, another opportunity for Mayor Wixom, Councilmember Landrum and myself to learn more about the industry and meet with leaseholders, contractors, and consultants. There were several other groups locally that were represented there as well. Next slide, please. And then in June, I think it was June 2nd, we hosted a full day for all of the offshore wind companies that was held at the harbor. It was a full-day tour of the harbor on land and on water. Equinor, Energized Ventures, and Golden State Wind were all there, as well as other representatives from the area. And then a couple of items have occurred since August, and what I'd like to mention is the offshore wind companies are responsible to produce what is called an agency communication plan, and that plan needs to be presented this year. So two of them have done that in the past month. We heard from Golden State, and we heard from Energized Ventures. And that plan basically is an outline of how they plan to communicate with the agencies as well as with the public. Next slide, please. I'd like to point out, especially to our residents and stakeholders, some of the legislative actions that are occurring and some of the public agencies that are involved. So first, regionally, REACH produced the Waterfront Siting and Infrastructure Study. And what I'd like to ask you to do, if you'll just Google those words, REACH Waterfront Siting and Infrastructure Study, you can find that study on the internet and look through it for yourself. Regarding legislative actions, SB 100 has been signed into law, and that requires California to reach 100% of total retail electricity from renewable sources such as wind by 2045. AB 205, basically, I'll summarize it for you. There's a lot that goes into these legislative laws, and I'm just basically giving you my take on really what it means to us. And this basically allows the leaseholders to go directly to the state for permitting. That is a legislation you should follow. Next slide, please. SB 286, another piece of very important legislation for our community as well as our commercial fishing organization. Two important parts to this legislation. One, I would call it the fast track permitting. This combines CEQA and NEPA into one process. And if you've been involved in development, you know if you do a development in the state of California, you need to go through CEQA. If it's going to have any significant environmental effects, same thing for federal permits. And so what this process does is it basically puts it under the coastal, I won't say who it's under. It's going to be combined into one process where there'll be one application and one process, both for CEQA and NEPA at the same time, which will save permitting time for the offshore wind companies. And then the second part of that legislation requires the Coastal Commission and the Department of Fish and Wildlife to convene a working group to develop a statewide strategy to ensure that offshore wind projects avoid and minimize impacts to ocean fisheries. And when it's for offshore wind energy projects, the Commission shall consider including compensatory mitigation for unavoidable impacts to fishing, and they shall recognize locally negotiated agreements between the fishing industry and offshore energy leaseholders. And I know that our commercial fishing group was highly active in seeing that that legislation included that language. And next slide, please. So AB 525, is a requirement for the Energy Commission to produce many different reports. And again, if you'll Google, you'll find these. If you just Google AB 525, CEC, there's a strategic plan that's being developed, an economic benefits plan that's being developed, a permitting roadmap. And as a part of that, State Lands Commission has already produced what is called a port readiness plan. That's a great document, again, If you'd like to just Google State Lands Port Readiness Plan, you'll find that readily on the internet, and you can see for yourself. And then there's one recent bill that was passed after I prepared this presentation. In fact, it was just passed about 10 days ago. It's AB 1373, and that allows the Department of Water Resources to serve as a central procurement entity for non-fossil fuel energy. So this basically creates a path to ensure that the leaseholders have a power purchase agreement in place when they begin operations in 2030. And that was one of the sticking points, as we've heard, throughout the months of the leaseholders not knowing if they were going to have anyone to buy their electricity. Next page, please. So on the federal side, just some basic information here. The Biden administration has set a goal of 30 gigawatts of offshore wind energy by 2030. California plays a big role in seeing that happen. And the Inflation Reduction Act granted hundreds of millions of dollars for planning, modeling analysis, and for onshore and offshore interstate transmission lines. And then BOEM recently produced the California Offshore Wind Ports Assessment. Again, just Google that information and you will find that online. It's a very interesting document. So where do we go from here? Next slide, please. So we already know that the initial leases were auctioned and granted on a provisional basis in December 2022. We are currently 2023, and we are seeing pre-survey meetings and the planning stages taking place. And the lessees, as we have begun seeing, will begin to submit their public engagement plan. Next year, and for the next several years, they will be submitting their site assessment plans, field surveys, and then finally their construction and operations plan. BOEM then in 28 will decide whether the construction operations plan is complete and sufficient, and then they will begin the NEPA, CEQA, environmental and technical reviews at that point. And then if everything goes as they plan, BOEM will approve the COP, and if it meets the requirements, construction will begin at that time. So that concludes my presentation, Council. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you very much, Ted. I appreciate that. And I think I'm going to look to my right and turn it over to Planning Commissioner Roshan for his side to take the first questions.
Mayor, thank you very much. Nice to be here with everybody. Thanks for having us today. Let's go around and we get a chance to ask questions and respond. Do you mind if we start with you, Eric?
I don't have any questions. Just a second. Give me a second.
Sure, take your time. Others? Asia?
This might be too early to get answers, but do we know how the construction of this industry will impact our waterfront? I know that's a big question. Do we know what Morro Bay is obligated to yet? Do we know what we're committed to yet? Are we even that far in the process?
Mayor, are we looking for Ted to respond?
Yes, please. Ted, you got this?
Yes, Commissioner. Thank you for the question. We're not at that point. There's still a lot of information that we are gathering. The offshore wind companies have not been specific as to their needs at Morro Bay, and I can assure you that no commitments certainly have been made at this point, but that's early in the process. I think some of that will likely transpire next year.
Eric?
What do we know anything about the alternative landing sites for the cable landings, for instance, the Naval Base in Cambria or the China Cove discussions? Is there been any other alternative, let's say, landing sites for the cables and or port services?
Yeah, Commissioner, thank you again. And that's a technical question that I'm just not able to answer. I think that'll come with other individuals.
Joe, please.
I'm curious as to the term port readiness, and from the presentation, I understand that the authorities aren't quite ready to answer that question in detail. So, I mean, you've already responded earlier, so I'm yeah. expecting.
Well, what I would recommend, Commissioner, thank you again for bringing that up. If you would Google that report, that port readiness survey, I think there's a lot of information out there that will give you more of what the offshore wind companies potentially need.
All right, thank you.
Mike.
Eon, what's nice about driving to Morro Bay is you have a couple of hours to get information while you drive. So I happened to be listening to the radio, and they were talking about wind farms. And one of the issues they brought up was funding and how underfunded these things are. That was on the radio today. So I'd like to ask the question, what part of the funding will come from the feds and what part will come from the state? And how are we meeting those expectations as far as funding?
Commissioner, that's the $100 million question. There's a tremendous, and I don't have all the answers on that, to be honest with you, but there, you know, from what I've seen, there's a tremendous amount of federal funding that is being positioned towards this industry, as well as state funding. We don't have any specifics on what is available at this point. So, I mean, I can't tell you specifically, but again, I think some of the legislation indicates that not only is the funding available to help support build it, but now with AB, 13, let me go back to my notes here, AB 1373, the offshore wind companies can be assured that there is a power purchase agreement in place.
Okay, yeah, and just as a follow-up, I heard that the states would be going back to the feds for more funding of these projects.
And that could very well be.
Hi, Ted. Oh, you're done, Mike?
Yeah.
This is Bill Roshan. I have a couple of informational questions, which I think are important at this time. A simple thing, I wonder if we could get all the links on the website for the contacts you just mentioned in your report. Thank you for your report. It's helpful. If we could get a clear access on the web to get those links available for the community. Second question, there's a number of key agencies, both state and fed and local. I'm wondering how we begin to identify leadership from those agencies, both regulators and others, and outreach to sort of find ways that we as a local community, kind of at the center of all this, could find a way to begin to engage with those leaders. I'm talking about from BOEM, you know, Betsy, Coastal Commission. Could we begin to compile that that outreach list?
Yes, and first of all, great idea on producing links to those reports. I'll see what we can do to possibly get a web page on the city's website that could provide an easy access to that.
Thank you.
And we have had some dialogue with the federal agencies as well as the state agencies. I think that's an overall question for the city. I would probably lean towards city management to determine how that might be done, but we are certainly engaged in every opportunity we have to meet and find out more information. You know, we do that.
Yeah, I think the question is really to focus our awareness with the community that this is an opportunity and probably a critical one to move forward. Thanks, Ted.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to jump in real quick and then turn it over to council. A few comments you just asked about, Chair Roshan, was about the how do you access that information. Part of what they're doing right now is the communication plan. The two companies that Ted shared have started to do that. In those communication plans, as they're brought public, it will list all of those contacts. That's part of what these two companies have done. I sat in on the first Zoom meeting, and it really was just identifying about 40 agencies and who each one of those people would be. So that will be made public for everyone.
Thank you, Mayor.
Eric, to your question about where is the energy going to land? Have we heard anything about the other two locations you mentioned? Based on the intent of the energy and what the desire, and I'm not taking any position or advocating, I'm just sharing information, is that they will need multiple locations to land energy. So it won't just be one place. They've talked about horizontal drilling like they did with the cables over in Montaña de Oro for the fiber optics and down in Grover Beach area, things like that. So there is a potential. The issue is transmission is just not available in the state for what this endeavor is, how grand it is. As Ted shared, the AB 1373 that the governor did about guaranteeing procurement, because that's been the whole reason the companies have been apprehensive moving forward, is because there's been no guarantee of a purchaser. And exactly what was being shared by Commissioner, Mike, thank you, Rodriguez. There's too many people here at the table. I think what you were alluding to is the East Coast, where the funding issues are there, and so some of them are stepping aside and saying they can't, you know, the cost of supplies, thus everything about it has exceeded what they could do. So that's the East Coast. Ted, you also talked about the channel dredge, and I just don't want anybody to be confused. That is something that the Army Corps of Engineers does on a regular basis. It's not anything extra. It's our inter-channel dredge, and we secured those funds when we were in Washington, D.C. So with that, I'm going to look to my left and turn it over to Councilmember Ford. Thank you.
It's going to be one of those days, isn't it? Thank you, Mayor. And it's such a pleasure to welcome all of our commissioners to this meeting. This is great. I don't really have, the only question I have at this time is, first, can we silence our phones, please, if you don't mind doing that? And then the second is, I'm wondering, you know, it says in 2023, where it's the pre-survey meetings and planning stage, and I'm just curious if there has been any discussion with the City of Morro Bay on our involvement with that with the surveying process for the lease sites, if we've been involved in that conversation. Just curious.
I can answer that, Councilmember Ford, if you'd like.
Yes.
We've had contact from a few, I would call them subcontractors to the offshore wind companies, you know, inquiring about the potential to have survey vessels at the harbor. Again, no decisions have been made. They're basically just making contacts, you know, regarding what's the capability, how large of a vessel. So they are beginning to think about that and plan for it. I do know that survey vessels are limited, so that's going to be a challenge for all of them. But again, I think more of that is going to come later this year and early next year.
Okay, thank you for that. I appreciate it. That's the only question I have at this time. Thank you.
Councilmember Barton.
I don't have any specific questions. I'm still mulling over the all the topics that have come up, and this is great to have both groups together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Landrum.
First of all, I would like to thank Director Chaffone for this report. It's really impressive, and considering there's so much that we don't know, you've really put it all together in such a really easy to understand and really complete way, and I appreciate that. I would like to have you maybe explain a little better about AB 1373 and how that energy is going to be guaranteed, just for transparency, so that because we are all taxpayers here, so that we know and understand what that means.
Councilmember Landrum, I just literally got a hold of that bill. I think it was Friday. It's, as you can imagine, these bills are pretty substantial. I know that there are several dates involved in it and certain timelines that are being met, but the basic idea is that by 2030, there'll be sufficient funding, I believe federal, to basically be the backstop for offshore wind purchase power agreements. I can do more research on that, you know, when I get back, and that might be another opportunity if we're able to create a separate web page to maybe include links to these particular legislative actions that are occurring and maybe some summary information.
Thank you. And then I just want to share one, because I serve on the offshore wind subcommittee and have met with some of the companies lately. I just want to share at this time, I think I've asked all the companies that we've met with lately that have come to Morro Bay. There's only three of them. And I haven't really heard a definitive answer, because if it's we all want to have this green energy and get off of our dependence on fossil fuels, but I haven't heard what the net cost of this all of this energy is going to be, you know, because you think that they are using vehicles and ships to transport all the components, so far it sounds like they don't even know. They haven't been able to calculate all of that yet. So I just wanted to, that's my impression of what I have heard.
Councilmember Edwards, questions?
I don't have any questions at this time, but I really appreciate Director Chaffone's report and your ability to convey here today, simplify it for us in the public. And I do think it's going to be a good idea, especially also with AB 205, connecting, if we can have links to those bills, because the connection with that as well as the BESS and how those projects, you know, how that would work with relationship to both types of projects. So appreciate that.
Are there any other questions before we move on to our next item?
My only question would be, just following up, AB 205 does seem to significantly affect our decision-making process on both this, and I think it does. My question would be, does AB 205 usurp, should we vote one way or the other? Are we voting into the wind, so to speak?
With that, I will defer to our legal counsel with that question on AB 205.
Sure. Assembly Bill 205 allows applicants for both battery energy storage systems that are the capacity that are being proposed in Morro Bay, as well as for onshore infrastructure for these wind projects, to receive their permits from the California Energy Commission rather than from local authorities if they so choose to apply for those. They still need to go through some other state agencies, most significantly being the Coastal Commission. But yes, these projects could secure the necessary permits through a state agency rather than going through local permitting authorities.
Thank you.
Can I just clarify too, through the mayor and the chair, vice chair? Next year there's supposed to be a state ballot initiative that would return power back to the local governments. So how would that impact this whole thing or blow it up? No, that's another thing I know. That's coming, so we have to consider all these things.
Certainly, the voters of the state of California could change AB 205 through ballot measure. The ultimate legislative authority rests with the people in the state.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, can I add on to that, too? City Attorney, what opportunity do we as a planning commission and a city government have to engage this process with AB 205? What would the opportunities be for community benefit, for example, other opportunities that are critical to the city?
As Assembly Bill 205 is currently written, my understanding is the applicants need to have at least one community benefit agreement with somebody in the region. It doesn't have to be the city. It could be Native American tribes. It could be fishermen. It could be somebody. So whether or not they approach the city or someone else, that's to be determined. They're supposed to show to the state agencies that there's a net economic benefit to the local community. What the burden of proof is for the agency to accept their conclusions is somewhat unclear. I think that if the city were to engage in this process, if these applications were submitted to the California Energy Commission, then there would be opportunities, but the ultimate decision would be up to the CEC on whether or not these permits are issued. And then, of course, Coastal Commission has to be involved, too.
So being selfish for my city, if I would push you further, I would want more of an opportunity, I think, to make our case.
Yes, and I've actually spoken with the mayor about this and with other folks within City Hall about if these applications were submitted to the CEC, then there are different opportunities that the city could, at its discretion, engage in to make its voice heard. As it stands right now, there have been no applications submitted to the CEC. There's currently an application before the city right now. But if things were to change, I absolutely would be available to engage with the city on making sure that every possible opportunity for the city's voice to be heard.
And this is an important question, right?
I believe so.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. And I would just share that in our conversation, you have shared with me that at this point, AB 205 has been untested in the state. So,
yes. The Assembly Bill 205, there's been no project that has gone to the state under Assembly Bill 205 at the present. So it's unclear exactly how it would work because it's new legislation.
Thank you for that update. Director Chaffone, thank you so much for the information. Again, this is just to share this information so that you have the same information we have. I love the idea of setting up that website, and I think that's important to share these projects that so affect our community, and everybody will have that updates and information as it comes. The webpage is great, and also the Director Chaffone offers updates at our council meetings on offshore wind. So with that, if we're ready to move on to our next item, I will turn it over to Community Development, and we will discuss an update on the Vistra Battery Storage Project.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a second while we bring up the presentation. I guess I'll take this opportunity to sort of reinforce maybe, you know, one of the comments that you made earlier about, you know, what the City Council and Planning Commission can do here as it relates to this, because this is a little different than the offshore wind project. We actually have a pending application before the city now for the battery energy storage project, or the BESS. So that limits the Council and Planning Commission's ability to really, you know, engage in a discussion on project merits, right? So what you are really kind of limited to is project questions. You shouldn't be debating the merits of the case or the project. That opportunity would be afforded to you later on in the process, assuming the project moves forward to discretionary review and public hearings before the Planning Commission and City Council. So just kind of wanted to maybe put a reminder out there for you. Looks like we got the presentation up, so I'll move into the update on the status for the BESS project now. Project location is at 1290 Embarcadero Road. That's the former location of the power plant property. It's approximately 107 acres in size, with the BESS project covering about 24 of those. And the BESS project is proposed in the area where the fuel oil storage tanks were located. The project includes a 600-megawatt battery energy storage project, also includes demolition of the three stacks, the main power building, and then development of a master plan for the entire area of the property. Permits that are associated with it are the coastal development permit. One of the speakers previously was correct, is that the CDP would be appealable to or by the Coastal Commission. has a conditional use permit with it. It has a master plan, which would require certification by the Coastal Commission as part of the city's local coastal program. And then there's the Environmental Impact Report, or EIR. Here are a couple of maps of the site. The one on the left has the kind of outline of the 107 acres shown on it, outlined in sort of that reddish, maybe sort of fuchsia-looking color. And then on the right is a site plan for the project. The left portion of the site plan is that area where they're proposing the BESS. Those are approximately 90,000 square foot buildings, three of them. And then to the right of that and to the upper right portion of the map, on the right is the PG&E switchyard, and then below that is the area where the main power building and the three stacks are located. Some of the background on the project, the original application was submitted in December of 2020. It was reviewed internally by staff and deemed incomplete on January 21st of 2021. We did receive a revised submittal from Vistra in February of 2021. Eventually resulting in the application being deemed complete for processing in February of 2021. Also in February of 2022, we received a revised project that expanded the nature of it. It wasn't just the BESS anymore. It was going to include the demolition of the three stacks and the main power building. The master plan shortly thereafter was included in the project, and as that is a requirement of the city's general plan that was adopted in 2021. EIR got underway in early 2022. As far as the master plan goes, we've had one community workshop, and we released a survey where we received a little over 600 responses to that. Survey responses are posted on the city's website under the current planning projects page, so people can view that information in there, as well as other information associated with the BESS project, including background and technical studies. EIR status, EIR is being prepared by Rincon Consultants. Rincon is hired by the city, and it covers all of the project components, which is the BESS, demolition of the stacks, the main power building, and the master plan. The EIR is being based on background technical studies that are being prepared by both the applicant and Rincon. All applicant-prepared studies are being peer-reviewed by Rincon. Draft EIR sections that have been completed to some extent include project description, environmental setting, effects found not to be significant, aesthetics, cultural resources, geology and soils, hazards and hazardous materials, and transportation. Several of these studies are in draft format now, and our sections are in draft format now and are being reviewed by both the applicant and city staff. Completion of the EIR is anticipated at the end of this year. And then following that, it would be likely released for public review in the beginning of 2024. I think you had, one of the speakers previously requesting, an extension or expansion of the minimum 45-day review period. That is something that we've actually internally been discussing with the Vistra team as well, given the size of this document. So I'd be curious to hear input from Planning Commission and Council on that, so that we can continue that conversation with the applicant. Once we receive comments, RINCON will prepare responses to all comments, and then the final draft of the EIR will be prepared, and that's when our public hearing process will start. It will start with the Planning Commission, and Planning Commission will be making a recommendation to the City Council, and the City Council will be the final review body from the city standpoint, but as was noted earlier, the projects in this location would be appealable to the Coastal Commission, and the master plan portion of it would have to be included and certified by the Coastal Commission as part of our LCP to take effect. And we're looking again at that portion for public hearings, probably in the summer of next year timeframe, if you will. Let's see. Other project-related information, our fire department has released a request for proposal to hire an outside consultant to assist with safety analysis of the project. One of the things they might review is we're anticipating receiving an off-site consequences analysis similar to the analysis that was provided at the meeting they had in Moss Landing related to the plume that was discussed earlier at this meeting. Consultant will be able to help us evaluate that information as well as safety components of the project. And again, that RFP closes on October 10th. We have the citizen initiative that was submitted to the city clerk's office in May of 2023. The initiative will require any changes to land use for certain properties located around the best property, around the Vista property, for changes for land use related to visitor serving commercial and or commercial recreational fishing. And any changes proposed in that area would be required to go to a vote of Morro Bay voters. And as the City Council is aware, at your last the City Council meeting on September 12th, 2023, you voted to order an election on the proposed ordinance to be held on November 5th of 2024. We also have a reimbursement agreement. This is a big project. It's got a lot of moving parts to it, and it's expensive. So the city entered into a reimbursement agreement with Vistra. They reimburse all costs associated with the project to cover not only the consultant costs that we've hired out, but also city internal costs, that's staff, as well as legal counsel. And again, those costs are being covered by the applicant. I think that's the end of my presentation. I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Director Graham. I will look to Chair Roshan and let you take it from your side.
If you don't mind, Commissioners, I'll start this time. Scott, thank you for that report. I'd like to go right away to one of the speakers in public comment today, Mr. Steve Ray, who made some very strong points about EIR issues. If you could respond to his questions. One was 45 days versus 90 for an EIR of this scope.
Yeah, you would note that the 45 days is the minimum. That's what's noted in the staff report and was noted in my presentation. We realize internally that this is a large document with lots of technical components to it, and we have been having ongoing conversations with the applicant about having a longer review period. So I appreciate the commentary. I think that, you know, that's likely appropriate, and so again, I was interested in hearing what the Planning Commission and City Council thought about that.
I'm glad to hear that, and also his response, or your response to his question about the fact that the introduction was completed before the final.
It's a draft, and based on some of the information that we have to date, we had, you know, draft sections of the EIR early on in the process before it was expanded to include the master plan and to include the demolition of the stacks and the main power building. And so that's what that was referring to.
Scott, another process question, the master plan. There's been one workshop, one public meeting. What do you expect the rollout to be? How do we make sure that we've got community engagement in a, let's call it a, substantial way?
So we did that, and we did the community survey. Again, we received over 600 responses on that. RINCON is now taking that and developing draft sections of a master plan that would then be released for public review, and then we would have a second workshop to present those sections, and then the project would be revised, and updated to form a final master plan. That's kind of what the process will look like. I anticipate there being if not an additional workshop with it, then you would have multiple meetings at Planning Commission and then City Council as that document makes its way through the review process.
I think the Commission's very interested in that, and so a more concrete plan would be great. Yeah. Mike, did you want to go?
Yeah, I think the Chair got most of my questions, but I would be more interested in, like, a timeline for us, especially for us being available and, you know, when those dates will start happening, you know.
Okay.
That's
we don't have a timeline right at this moment. We have a kind of
whenever you
rough timeline on it.
Okay, great.
Joe.
I think most of my questions are best asked of Public Vistra representatives. But when I was looking at the files over the last few days, and there's a great deal of material to go through, so I may have missed it. So I saw the hazard analysis with respect to the construction and normal operation. But I didn't find anything, an analysis of potential accidents in the operation of the plant. And now I see that there's a safety consultant that's being hired. But as part of Vistra's application, is that some sort of information they are going to supply, or is that not typical of this? Or what?
They have indicated they are going to give us some information along those lines. From an EIR standpoint, it's not something, you know, that you're often looking at in an EIR because the battery project isn't designed to catch on fire. But it is. I mean, this is related to CEQA and the law that surrounds CEQA. But we realize it's a concern of the community, hence the reason the room's packed full of folks, and we have an initiative that's pending. So we understand that, and the applicant understands that as well, and is going to be providing us what I referenced before as an off-site consequences analysis, which would look at, you know, impacts related to the project if a battery were to catch on fire. And then we're hiring a consultant specifically to look at safety, you know, related items associated with the project, and that could have an impact on the EIR outcome for sure. So we're looking at all of those things, and we've had, you know, multiple conversations internally, both internally and with the applicant regarding this issue, given it's such a huge concern to the community, obviously.
Scott, thanks. Asia, questions?
Could you tell me one more time about the Citizens Initiative and the impacts that might have?
The Citizens Initiative serves to lock in land use. The land use out there right now was put in place in 2021 when the general plan was adopted. It is visitor-serving commercial, and it also picks up on the waterfront. What is it? The commercial fishing? Measure D area. And locks that into place in the area of the project. So what it would make if the initiative were to be voted and approved by the Morro Bay citizens would be that any change to that land use to something else, like light industrial, to accommodate a battery project, would have to go back to the voters for approval. And so the project, if the initiative were successful, the project could go through, can continue going down its road, continue processing, go to its hearings in front of Planning Commission, go to its hearings in front of City Council, and then ultimately they would have to go to the citizens to gain approval for the land use change that would be part of the master plan. So that would be, you know, assuming they maintained their processing with the city, that's what they would do.
And then what role in that process does the Coastal Commission or the State Energy Commission play?
Coastal Commission would certify any land use change that we had out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it would go to them.
Okay.
Assuming the applicant was successful in taking the vote to the Morro Bay citizens to change that a portion of the land use on the site to light industrial.
Okay.
Thank you. Asia, thank you. Eric.
Going back to you, Mr. City Attorney, could AB 205 circumvent any city initiative?
So the proposed city initiative would require that if Vistra seeks the necessary land use change, because they do need a land use change right now, part of their application, including getting a CDP, CUP, and the master plan, have a land use change. And so instead of going to the council, they would need to go to the voters for that land use change. All of that material that would normally go before Planning Commission and then City Council, the CDP, the CUP, the master plan, the land use change, all of that under AB 205 just goes to the California Energy Commission. So at this point, there is no application to the CEC on Vistra's behalf. But they could do that. And so that's the question, you know, and as indicated earlier, if they were to do that, then, you know, the city as a policy direction could certainly, in a discretionary decision, become as involved as possible in the AB 205 process. But they haven't applied to the CEC.
Could you explain that a little further, how the city would engage in that process, Chris?
So the city would be participating in the hearings before the CEC, the equivalent of the way the public in Morro Bay participates in hearings before the Planning Commission and the City Council. And so it would be a policy choice of ultimately the City Council on how engaged the city would be in offering evidence, offering testimony, offering opinions on whether or not these permits should be issued by these state agencies or not. And also, there will be reports that have to be provided to the CEC if they go that route. And the city could choose to review and comment on those reports and offer opinions on the validity of those reports as well. I would like to think that, you know, the state agencies would give some deference to the local community that the project is proposed to be sited in. And that would be, of course, a policy choice on whether or not the city decides to engage in those discretionary actions.
Just one more time so I get it. The city would have the opportunity to participate. What are those hearings? Like, what's the structure of those hearings?
I'm not familiar with exactly how those hearings would occur because none of them have happened yet. AB 205 is a new piece of legislation. It was part of the state's push to streamline permitting for green energy. And so this is a new thing. I mean, if an application were submitted to the CEC to bypass the city, then the city would have the option of having staff and legal counsel review in more detail this process and what our opportunities would be. Given there is no application before the CEC right now, the city hasn't, you know, done a bunch of homework on it because they might not ever apply to the CEC. But if they do, I would assume that would be something considered heavily.
So, Chris, the consideration by the Planning Commission and ultimately what City Council has to say is still very important around this issue.
Yes.
Thank you. Question? Any other questions, Joe?
No, I'm not done. Sorry. So I just want to be very clear that this should the city deem this BESS as not desirable, and the initiative passes, and deeming this as visitor-serving commercial land, it is still possible for Vistra to go around.
Yes.
Thank you. And my second question, which is basically, if I would like, you have two slides of mine. And this is mostly for the sake of the EIR. I'm not expecting staff to have really a reasonable answer to this. In the oldest maps of Morro Bay, this is Rancho San. This is the Morro y Cayucos Rancho, and this is, I think, 1860 something. I forget, 1861. If you look at the lower line, the diagonal line going from northeast to southwest. The rock is at the very bottom there on the left. That's the original line of Morro Creek. And if you go to the next slide, this is the first plat map of the city of Morro Bay. And the top street there is the Beach Street, for instance. The street right out front here isn't even on this map. It's north. But where you see the creek coming down just at the top of the map, left of town of Morro, that is essentially the Maritime Museum. That's where the creek used to come in. And as evidenced by our recent floods, the creek kind of wants to go back there. And so my question essentially for the EIR is this, in two parts. Given the original routing of Morro Creek and its tendency to want to return to that route, as evidenced by the two recent floods, is flooding from an atmospheric river rain event during a king tide taken into account by the EIR for the BESS project? And the second half of that question is, what measure of 100-year estimated sea level rise is being used, and who decides what measure of sea level rise is being used? That's my questions.
Scott, do you want to take a swing?
So we conveyed the information to our consultant, and they'll take it under advisement as it relates to preparation of the EIR. Certainly, they look at flooding and FEMA flood maps and those types of things, and the plant is in an area that's identified as in the floodplain, so that is relevant, as is sea level rise to it. So they'll certainly take a look at that.
Joe?
I think the question is for Chris. If the initiative is successful in the general election, I was wondering if there would be any unanticipated legal consequences for some of the earlier agreements, the reimbursement agreement, even the RF easement agreement, and certainly the demolition of the stacks and the plant agreement. Is it too early to tell, or can you voice some thoughts on that?
So for the examples you gave, none of those agreements seek land use changes, so I don't see how the initiative would impact those. What the initiative does is it locks in current land use for the Vistra property and for the Measure D area, and it can't be changed other than by a vote of the people. So those prior agreements don't seek and don't need land use changes. So I think that's apples and oranges.
So from Vistra's standpoint or its predecessor, those negotiations didn't involve an assumption that this proposal for the battery storage would go forth. That wasn't an underlying assumption for it.
The applicant, when the application was deemed complete for the BESS project, they went in eyes wide open that they needed a land use change, and that's something that typically goes to a city council. If this citizen's initiative were passed, then it would need to go to the voters. So they know they need a land use change. So that's not news to them.
Joe, if I could tag on, Chris, even if the initiative doesn't go forward, 205 is still an option for Vistra.
205 has been an option for Vistra since the governor signed Assembly Bill 205.
And how would it impact any of those agreements if they decide to do 205 in any case?
No, I don't see how it would. I mean, if the agreements we're talking about is the reimbursement agreement is simply the city making sure that all of its costs are being fully captured by this for the work on this project. The normal cost recovery fees that the city levies on projects in this case didn't capture the magnitude of the city costs. So the reimbursement agreement is just in real time paying the city back for staff and legal and consultant costs.
Got it.
So. And then as for the Vistra MOU, that was a deal that was done in part to settle litigation and involve some other aspects, and that's a binding agreement.
So I'll drill down one more step. If they would go the route of 205, how would community benefits be impacted relative to the city?
That's speculative at this point.
So there would be no opportunity for negotiation. In other words, that could not be an opportunity for us.
I can't really speculate. That's too much into the future. I mean, if the Vistra application proceeds to go forward with the city, then at some point there would be a discussion between Vistra and management and council on community benefits. If they go the AB 205 route, then there certainly would be a discussion on community benefits. I'm not sure how.
Well, let me ask the question this way. If they went that way, there would be no required commitment to community benefits as part of the process.
It's hard to say one way or the other because we haven't had discussions with them on the community benefits.
But would it be at their option?
Well, community benefits right now are really at their option either route they go.
Well, it's negotiation, though.
Yeah, it's all subject to negotiation.
Would they have to comply with the negotiation?
So AB 205, I believe, requires them to consult with stakeholders, but ultimately the decision-making authority is with the CEC rather than with the City Council.
Great. Thank you, Chris. I think we're good, Mayor.
Perfect. I was going to say we're getting way too speculative, and we don't have that much time to get to our third item. So, Councilmember Ford, questions?
Thank you, Mayor. Some great questions, by the way. A couple of mine were answered, or not answered yet. I do have a question and it was brought up by Ms. Dorfman regarding security, And I'm just curious, I know that other battery projects are, you know, maybe a little bit more removed from higher populations and that sort of thing. So I'm curious, at what point in the process for the permitting of this project does the conversation regarding the amount of security needed come into play?
I mean, I think it's an ongoing, you know, discussion. What they've proposed right now is simply, you know, securing the facility with fencing and things like that and whatever other electronic surveillance type, you know, things they would deploy on the site. I don't know that they're proposing to have, you know, what type of guards or anything on site. We don't have anything from that, do we? No, we don't have anything that indicates that's what they're proposing at this point.
Okay, so that wouldn't, as a city, we would not be able to ask for more, or that would not be what they would bring forward, would they would offer, and then if we went through the process with the city and the initiative, you know, didn't come through and we
I think it's, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. I'm just thinking out loud right now on how to ask this question. So.
I think. I think it's a legitimate concern and one that, you know, we certainly could express to them and ask them how they would resolve it. And potentially that takes the form, because it's a discretionary project, takes the form of conditioning or something along those lines. I don't know that it's necessarily part of, like, the EIR process or something, but it might be just part of the overall project review. We're still kind of getting there. We're hiring the safety consultant to kind of help us out with, like the fire side of those things. And I think that kind of leads into those conversations as well. So appreciate the concern. And it's just nothing we've, we haven't, delved into that component of it too deeply yet.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious where in the process that would, that part of the conversation would enter and who could initiate that.
I think it's, it can be on the table now for discussion with them. I mean, certainly we're going to have a conversation with them later this week. We meet with them weekly. And we'll talk about things that were raised at the meeting today. So
that's good to hear. Thank you. I don't have any other questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Barton.
I wanted to thank our city attorney for opening up some of the questions that are out there when you start reading about the new legislation and how and where that could go. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Councilmember Landrum.
I would like to start by thanking all of you that have come out to this meeting. It's really impressive, and it's always nice. I don't know, I'm speaking for myself, but it's, I think the rest of the council would agree and the Planning Commission that it's nice to have an audience here and so many people engaged. And like I said last time, please keep coming. I would like to ask about the insurance question that was asked. First of all, has the city calculated what the insurance requirements, how that will affect our insurance if they're, with the BESS, and then also how it will affect property owners? Is that in the EIR? Or
no, that wouldn't be. Yeah, I mean, economic analysis doesn't follow through in an EIR, so there's no type of economic analysis related to that.
Just considering that maybe a cost that the city will incur, that seems like it maybe should be calculated in somehow. And then also I would like to know, it's coming up at the next meeting, in fact, the master plan, the waterfront master plan update, and the grant that you're seeking for that. And I'm wondering how it's expected that that will tie in with this, the Vistra master plan, and, do they line up time-wise, or how, I mean, it seems like they should all be looked at the same time. And I'm wondering how that will work out.
Given that the Vistra master plan is much further along in the process and we haven't started a master plan process to update the waterfront master plan, they won't align. So as they come forward, they will recognize, like the waterfront master plan, assuming council authorizes us to move forward with that, then it would recognize and take off from the information that's provided in that report for the area that's involved with the Vistra master plan.
Oh, and then one last question regarding the air quality section and the greenhouse gases. Is that, do I understand that is that calculating if the plant, once it's in place, or is it to build the plant that it's?
It addresses construction-related impacts and addresses operational impacts from the project, and bases, and then also looks at vehicle miles traveled, because that's the requirement of CEQA. So those are the things that the EIR will look at.
Thank you.
Councilmember Edwards.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Mr. Graham for, answering all these questions. I know it's a lot, and a lot of it can be speculative at this point. But I kind of want to shift gears, if I may. You did mention that the safety analysis could have an impact on the EIR, And I was wondering if I could, I see Chief McCrane in the room, I was wondering if I could have him speak to the safety analysis and hopefully maybe give us some of his perspective.
Good afternoon. So for the safety analysis, we took a tour up to Moss Landing a couple weeks ago and got a little bit of information. We were able to see the evolution of their project throughout the different phases, and we could see how they went from phase one, phase two, and then phase three, where they retrofitted a building and then built a site-specific building and then went to a cargo container version. So we were able to see the safety features in place, and they provided us with some information which has been published here with the plume modeling. And that allows us some more information looking at this. Again, this is site-specific to Moss Landing, and I don't have anything specific to Morro Bay. But looking at what they've provided, it gives us some measurable information about emergency response to this facility, protection measures, things like that. And it shows that, you know, the relative exposure limit extends out to about 1,800 feet around that facility. Outside of that, then you're inside what is considered a safe exposure limit based on this data. Again, this is site-specific for Moss Landing, and I don't have anything for Morro Bay yet. Depends on which technology. We had discussions about emerging technology, things that are going through underwriter testing. So until we have specific data, you know, I can't comment on the specifics of what Morro Bay would be.
Oops. Thank you, Chief. I was just wondering, and so on that, what are some of the things safety-wise from the analysis and hiring a consultant are we kind of hoping to get that could impact the EIR?
Okay. So some of the things we're hoping to get is just an independent review of the data that they give us. It allows us to have experts in this industry, which it's an emerging technology, so it's constantly evolving. They're constantly changing you know, what types of battery chemicals, the orientation of the plates, things like that. So taking a look at that data, we can have experts review the data that they provide, check its validity, and provide feedback based on industry standards and allow us the ability to review that and make a decision based on what's acceptable at that time, what the current technology is at the time that we get those reports.
Thank you so much.
Welcome.
I have another question or comment, if I can.
Are you finished, Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Graham, I've heard quite a bit about homeowners' insurance policies being canceled, you know, for fire insurance because of California's risks of fire and flood and things like that. And so I really think if there's some way we could include the potential for that in the EIR, it might be a good idea because, I mean, if you play that out, it's just such an unknown. And if you can kind of figure out if that's a consideration,
it's not something that could probably be included in the EIR just because the law around EIRs tells you exactly what needs to go in it, and that's not something that would go in it. But it might be something else that we can look at outside of that. And maybe I'll, you know, talk with the consultant and maybe talk with the applicant a little bit about that to see, like, what kind of information we might be able to find out there related to that concern.
All right.
Certainly, I'm sure others have it, so I think it's a great thing. It's a good idea that you brought forward for us to at least take a look at.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I would echo that. I think if there's an economic analysis that's already been brought into question about a value of change in property tax for the site, then equally that economic analysis should include the potential of change of value to other real estate in the area. So with that, we're ready to move on to item number 3. And if I can turn it over to Chair Roshan and let you, this is your wheelhouse with the Community Development Director. So,
Mayor Wixom, thank you so much. Scott, do you want to do a quick staff report on this, and then we can the two commissioners that are so far involved with this are Joe and Graffi and myself, and we've been working very closely with council on this, including Councilmember Edwards and Landrum, and thank you guys for that. Would you want to give us an introduction and then we can follow up?
Certainly. I have a brief PowerPoint presentation for the item. In November of 2022, City Council approved the new zoning code. The new zoning code included a height increase for the area along Morro Bay Boulevard, extending down to Main and then north on Main to Beach Street. And so that figure that you see there, the area that's kind of the darker or the black area, that's effectively one lot in from Morro Bay Boulevard and from Main Street. And so in that area, height increased from 30 feet to 37 feet. Council provided some direction to form a future subcommittee to take a look at what impacts from that might look like. Subsequently, Council did form that committee. It includes, as was indicated by Chair Roshan, Council members Landrum and Edwards, and then we have advisors to that committee that include our Chair of our Planning Commission, Bill Roshan, and Commissioner Ingraffia, as well as Jeff Eccles. He's CEO of the Housing Trust Fund, San Luis Obispo. We have Paul Boyclair, he's the owner of the Siren. We have Betty Winholtz, Morro Bay citizen, and then Carrie Araya, owner of Buttercup Bakery. So those are sort of the advisors to the council subcommittee, if you will. The subcommittee has met on a couple of occasions, and with some help from Planning Commissioners Roshan and Ingraffia, have put together a kind of base framework for how the initiative would move forward. Framework looks something like that on this, what's shown on the screen there. Discuss desired outcomes, potentially development of a downtown design district like guidelines that would be later incorporated into the city's zoning code, and then creation of possible incentives to work around this, maybe incentivizing affordable housing or different opportunities for economic development, or maybe even improved pedestrian experience in the downtown. So those are some ideas that have come out of the committee so far. We have a meeting structure. We have six meetings that we're going to conduct that will include the whole group. We're going to have two public meetings, one to take input up front, and then one at the end to report out back out sort of findings of what we've come up with, if anything. That first full committee meeting with all advisors will take place on October 18th. And that was part of my abbreviated staff report for that item.
And if it's all right, Joe and I might add a little to your commentary. Council members, this came out of, and Jen, you might remember this, a request where part of our zoning code had raised the height of downtown from 30 to 37 feet. At that time, the Planning Commission, a majority of the Planning Commission, recommended, even with the understanding of why this policy was being explored, that it wasn't the right tool, that what we needed was a tool that wasn't blunt, but that was more precise. And it's a little bit like trying to cut a 2x4 with a hammer. It's not precise enough, and we wanted to complete the toolkit. That was the intention from the commission. At the time, City Council passed the increase, but with the intent to do the downtown design district. So thank you for that. And that's what we're doing now. And I think we're excited about the opportunity to explore how this might happen. We really see the downtown district as not just an issue in a district in itself, but a connector, something that really does help us give form and shape to Morro Bay. So we're excited to begin this process, which is going to start in just a few weeks. And again, a thank you to the council members that are leading the effort. And Joe, did you want to add any comment?
Well, I think that's very well said. I can't really add very much other than to say the original initiative to raise the maximum height to 37 feet covered a very large swath of the downtown area, much too large in any way to be characterized as an experiment, and, a likely perfect example of the inevitable unintended negative consequences. So in this way, we're actually examining what the consequences might be of raising the height limits in some places, guarding against the undesired consequences, and trying to assure that some of the benefits that accrue from that actually occur. Additional housing, economic development, historical preservation. That's all. Just more attention to the inevitable and necessary details.
Joe, thanks. Council members, do you want to add anything? You've been part of the steering committee to date. Any encouragements?
I'm just looking forward to getting to work on this, and I would add to what Joe...
Grafia?
No, I was trying to think of what the commissioner in Grafia.
Oh, that's right.
Said about housing and further specify affordable housing. And other than that, yeah, I am just looking forward to it, and I think it is a really necessary thing that we're doing, and I'm happy that we're going to finally get started on it.
Thank you. Councilmember Edwards.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to going through this process for multiple reasons. One is for all the reasons that were stated in this report, but another to try to, you know, hopefully find a protocol or a standard in which we work on guidelines from here on out. It could be whatever we find from this could possibly be applicable to working on our waterfront master plan. So I'm really looking forward to the process and where we go from here. Thank you.
Thank you. And last thought is to all those on the Zoom call and those, thank you so much for being here today. There will be a public meeting on this in the beginning of November. Mm-hmm. That'll be soon announced, and we're so grateful when we hear your voices. Mm-hmm. It's one of our major efforts on the Planning Commission is to link community voice and values to the work we do on the commission. So thank you very much.
Chair Roshan, can I just add something? Only because I wanted to be on this design district, but I got tossed because...
You did?
Because of our friend here. Well, one of the things I compared it to is like our downtown is like the heart of a body, right? Yeah. We got some kind of hardening of the arteries, so we need to better connect our downtown with the rest of our city. I mean, that's where it all starts. And that's where it should end. But for our city attorney, though, with all this legislation coming down, I know there's going to be incentives and money coming from the state if we do the right thing, especially with affordable housing. And some, I don't want to say penalties, but if we don't build, as going through this process, if we don't look at housing, which has always been something I've fought for at least 20 years, housing and affordable housing. If we don't look for housing in that area, then we're just missing an opportunity, especially with all these new laws. Would you agree that this is an opportunity to meet the requirements of the new laws and what we're looking for in Morro Bay downtown?
So a lot of the new laws require cities to allow certain development, but whether the developers come or not is up to, you know, the market. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, the Downtown Design District Subcommittee, you know, there's an opportunity there to align with some of the goals the state has set forth. Certainly that's one of the possibilities.
Great. Thank you.
It's so nice to have a city attorney at your meetings. This really makes it more interesting. And if I could, real quick, I just wanted to welcome Yvonne Kimball, the new city manager, who's going to be very important to our design district as well. And so if I could just say thank you for coming to Morro Bay, but we're excited to work with you on the commission.
Thank you. And with that, I'm going to ask if any of the other council members have any comments or questions regarding this item. It was part of our goals, and so we were just kind of checking in on that. So I don't know if you have anything else, Councilmember Ford or Barton, that you want to ask or share.
Oh, no questions for the chair, just a comment. I'm so glad that we're taking this up. It's really, really needs to happen, and especially the affordable housing aspect of it is very important. So thank you.
I'll echo what Councilmember Barton just said. Yes, Commissioner Roshan, I most certainly remember this item and was happy to ask for that to come back as a part of the vote. And I'm so glad to see it coming to fruition and to actually
materializing and happening, and I know how important it is for our community to see this happen as well. I have one question. It's regarding the end result once we get to, I think, public meeting number two, I think, if I was following that correctly. Are they just presented to us, or are they do we have to vote on adopting those guidelines? Is there any sort of vote at the end, or is it just this is what they are?
The council's subcommittee will decide how the information gets brought back to council. And then the council as a whole, meaning the five of you, will decide whether to move policy forward or not. And if you do that, then it would go back to Planning Commission for consideration, and then through the normal process, recommendation to City Council, and then City Council would then vote on it.
And the way the committee is structured, we are an advisory committee to the two council members.
Got it. Okay.
And to further clarify that, so that means that the advisory committee advises us, and we bring that advice back to the council.
Yes, in all generousness, you could include us as part of that presentation, the advisory group.
Oh, I like it. Okay. Good idea.
Okay, that's my only question. Thank you. And thank you all for volunteering to take on another volunteer job. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And with that, I want to allow, we have a few minutes left. 10 minutes left, so I thought I would allow everybody 2 minutes if there's anything you want to go around and share from here to there for today's meeting, comments, concerns, suggestions, something you missed, as long as we don't break the rules. Eric, I'll start with you, or just anything in general.
Wow. the sewer treatment plant, we might want to consider adding into our master planning area. That would be one comment. So many comments. The connection between the waterfront and the downtown, there's currently a city-owned site there, a parking lot, along with the old Breakers Cafe, which has seen some private negotiations between the council, as they should be, and various people trying to buy it. And I think that site is the link between the downtown and the waterfront, and I would hope that before any elaborate negotiations happen on that site, that the larger community should be given an opportunity to opine, and the Planning Commission should be given an opportunity to opine on the potential of that link, because there's a couple of dead blocks in there on Morrowood Boulevard that could really use enlivening. I'll leave it to those 2 points right now.
That was in response to the downtown design district? Okay. I was just wondering, because that's my only comments are about the downtown design district discussion as well. And as you guys move forward, I just want to encourage, as a form of outreach to the business community, to make sure that the chamber is involved in the discussions and in the actual designs of the policies. And that's all, really.
Those graphs at the early part of the meeting showing the hydrogen dissemination into the atmosphere and the toxicity and all that, it got me thinking, because I remember an article I read, the Environmental Protection Agency announced in mid-January of this year that they're revising their standards for fine particle exposure. And I'm wondering if the diagrams we saw today in any way take that into consideration or are anticipating with the new standards, or whether it's even, whether hydrogen release is even in any way related to fine particle exposure. But it strikes me as something worth investigating.
Well, I'll just put it out there, because I know the council's going to get it regarding the objective design standards. So I'll just say you guys are going to be hitting it, but let me talk about something that I figured out a while back. But in the process of doing that, I
made a connection that I think we have to consider whenever we do things as a city as a whole, and that's that energy, water, and housing are not independent. They all happen together. We live in a state where if we go through a drought, we all have to cut back on our water use, right? It's either mandatory or voluntary water use. And when we go through a hot summer, we have to turn off our air conditioners, right? Or we can't plug in our EVs because we don't have the energy that's required to, you know, power up the state in hot times. So I just wanted to keep everybody focused on the fact that we don't do one without considering the others. Water, housing, and energy all work together. And I'm not saying electric or gas, all energy, because right now we can't just use electric. All right, so there will be a transition period. And I think we all recognize that. But I thought I'd throw that out there, but objective design standards are coming your way.
Nice. Thank you, commissioners, for all that. I'm going to use my 2 minutes to comment on the meeting today as a general process option. And let me start with thanking the mayor, first for your really kind comments that you began the meeting with. That was really generous. And then all the council members for including us. I'm excited today because the two focuses are together in the room for the Planning Commission, the community, and the council. The Planning Commission has three goals. Our first goal is to be an advisory board to City Council. That's our first goal. Our second goal is actually to make sure that we're implementing the general plan. Our third goal is also to look and to evaluate projects, project by project, brick by brick. And to do that, our key point is to involve the community. The community voice is one of our main missions, how to hear from you and how to use that. So this is exciting for us to sort of see how this all comes together. The role of the Planning Commission is important, I think, and the fact that you are giving us every opportunity to be a part of the big challenges facing our city, I think we're very grateful. We promise to work hard. We promise to be fair and respectful of others and to enhance the public trust. So thanks for including us, and I think I speak for all the commissioners with that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair Roshan. Council, anything you want to add? Councilmember Edwards, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I would like to say right back at you, you have been wonderful. I do not always attend the Planning Commission's meetings, but I do watch them, and I appreciate all the hard work that you all do. It's not easy, project to project, or even some of the bigger things that we have coming forward. So again, I want you to know how greatly you are appreciated, and we really do appreciate your knowledge and your expertise. It helps a lot.
I will echo that. As I told you all after the last Planning Commission meeting, that was a master class on how to hold a meeting, and I learned so much from that. I want to make sure that I make it known to regarding the bus, that I agree with the 90-day extended review period. And also, I am curious about what Commissioner Ingraffia mentioned about the standards for air quality changing, and I want to know if we have allowed for that, if the EIR is allowing for that, or if it's working off of older requirements.
Thank you. Councilmember Barton, anything in closing?
It's not specific to right now this meeting, but I just came back from the League of California Cities Conference, and I was so impressed with so many good ideas on affordable housing and small cities finding ways to work together to implement more housing than is happening right now, or more housing on a scale that fits cities. So anyway, so that's something I'm hoping we can look into also. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to thank you, Mayor Wixom, as well as Chair Roshan, for your work on bringing this meeting together and making it happen.
my past being on the commission, it really gave me a insider knowledge as to the work that has to be done as a planning commissioner, and I have such a great appreciation for you and have been, as Councilmember Edwards says, watches your meetings and often rewinds and watches them again because there's such great content that is provided during those meetings. And so I want to thank you for all of, every single one of you, all of the work that you do. And I know it, this is, for many of you, this is not the only hat that you wear, and I just really appreciate the time that you put into this. And I don't really have any other input to give. I'll just leave it at that. So thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Mike, I agree with you. It is intentional. It all has to connect. I think it gave us an opportunity to have this discussion and create a pause and questions. And, you know, when there was a comment earlier sitting on the WRF subcommittee, the offshore wind subcommittee and the Vistra subcommittee, somebody talked about, the fire chief talked about safety and different features, but one of the speakers talked about what it takes to put the fire out. So here we are over at the WRF talking about recycled water, IPR wells, where's the water going to go, and then you have, and we worry about droughts because of housing, how are we going to add more population to meet all our requirements, and then we have to think about what kind of water supply do we need if we're going to have some sort of energy project like that in our community? What does that take? So they all, in different ways, whether it's housing, utilities, it all has to come together. So thank you all for your time. Thank you to the Community Development Department for putting the presentation together. And Ms. Kimball, is there anything that you want to add at this point?
No, thank you, Mayor. No.
Go ahead. Thank you. With that, we will adjourn. I hope that we have...
Can I get one last quick question?
Sure.
Can we do this again?
Yes, I was just going to say, I hope that we will take an opportunity in the spring. We, in the past, had a twice-a-year meeting, and it had been changed to optional, and I think the council, you know, speaking to them would like that. So thank you. We're adjourned. Yeah. Oh, that was...